I didn't like. I mean, I guess, he's but I'm thinking good. Like, you know, like Shin Hai Yun. He's
again
okay,
another movie I haven't seen since it came out.
You haven't seen Armageddon
since it came out. I did see.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it since.
I had to go rewatch it, you know, after Lord of the Rings, because, you know, like Arwen's in it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, she's okay.
Because I remember her, Ben Affleck, and Bruce Willis. That's all I remember from that movie.
Right. Steve Buscemi was in it.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi's great. The astronaut captain, the devil is in it. It's one of his best roles. Shit, I can't.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Cannot keep up. Michael Clark Duncan, also one of my favorites. I was thinking his character, Bear. Armageddon is one of those things that it was like, this should have been better than it is, you know.
Well, in
what's
theory.
The guy? Okay, so William Fichtner is the colonel. He's the actual astronaut. Peter Stormare as the Russian astronaut, Amir.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's just been there. It's like, Russian-American made, all made in Taiwan. I want to go home, you stupid machine.
I'm thinking about it now that I see you wearing the NASA shirt. It's like, what are the space movies that, quote-unquote, you know, that's not just like Independence Day or Star Wars that I've seen multiple times? And I think it's The Martian. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, The Martian's fantastic.
Too. Like Space Cowboys, Apollo 13, Armageddon. These are all movies I've seen a grand total of one, maybe one and a half times since they came out or a couple years after when I was young, and never again.
Right. Armageddon's fine if you want to just turn off your brain.
Yeah, no, it is
and
a Michael Bay
Jesus,
movie
we've
all
been
the
going
way through.
For 2 minutes. That's been a minute. So.
Well, now we can swear though, so we're
good. you got me talking about, you know, movies and, yeah,
and this isn't even the topic of the day, we're just talking.
I know, right?
Yeah. This is like our actual podcast.
I did a little bit of homework. Did anyone else do any amount of homework for this?
I've been doing homework for 10 years.
I was gonna say, oh, yeah, I mean at this point moment. I there's nothing else I can add to by rereading these that I haven't already figured out again.
The first two novels are so short, it could be short stories.
No.
In that case, yes, because I reread them the last week.
Isn't Grave Barrel shorter than both of them?
I think
it's longer.
I think it's a little bit longer because there's more stuff happening.
Wait, hold on, excuse me. Yeah, Grave Peril is the one that you went with that was shorter? The one that's like two books that's basically one and a half books long?
Yeah, I don't think... I'm not talking about content. I'm talking about like the actual length of the book, I think, is a little bit shorter than count.
I still think the one is more.
Of course, Grave Peril is the one I don't have on my shelf for some reason.
That's not helpful, is it?
Yeah.
Go to your other shelf.
Let's see. So Full Moon.
Full Moon, I think, is kind
342
short.
Pages.
Yeah.
So that doesn't remotely qualify as short. Stormfront. We got the hardcover.
You have the fancy version.
So that's
311 pages. So,
but that's big font. Sure. So it's really in paperback size. It's like 360 pages.
I mean, I suppose. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying, but yeah. So
Stormfront is 8 hours an audiobook.
Oh, no one cares.
And Full Moon is 10 hours and Grave Peril is almost 12 hours.
Yeah. So he's reading slow.
AKA a book and a half for, you know, compared to Stormfront. So, but.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mr. Memory, bring it.
Yeah.
So,
what's your favorite?
We went over this last episode, so it's not that hard.
Do it again.
Okay.
Well, then.
So, as far as favorite goes, if I have to pick a top three, partial recency bias, I put Christmas Eve and Good People as a combo, as one.
Because you like to do that.
Because I can do that. Because I make the rules. Until or unless you actually wield any kind of executive power by kicking me off, I make the rules. And
EG is definitely better ask forgiveness than permission person.
Oh, yeah. But I don't ask for either. So I skip out all middlemen. Then I think it would probably be... Backup would be next as a favorite. And then third would be Day Off. I think that would be my general tentative order.
Good choices. I mean, I like all of those.
right? Well, no, what you're doing is you're picking which of your favorite Firefly episodes. Like, bro, there's only 14. They're all gold. But if one's got to win out over the other, then fine.
Well, no, we went over last time how some of them are weaker. I mean, like, you know, It's My Birthday Too is not a huge favorite of mine. It's okay, but it's not that great. Hera, what I like, but I mean, I hate the Murphy and Dresden. We went over this at the Carnival story. I'm not a huge fan of the other one in the stadium with the
goat. Curses.
Not curses. The one with the Dionysus worshippers.
Last Call. I think the ones that attacked Mac.
Yeah, like that's not a great one to me either.
I wanted more out of it in a way that I felt disappointed about. Like, I remember when Fistful of Warlocks came out, like I had built it up in my head more than the story ever gave me. So I felt kind of disappointed by it.
Yeah. Fistful of Warlocks was okay, but it's not, there was a missed opportunity to be a little more world fleshy rather than just focusing on, like, you get the cool thing of Wyatt Earp being a Venator, but okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that one, I was definitely overhyped for that one compared to what we got. I didn't hate it, but...
But the premise sounds a lot more...
I think it suffered from being a short story as much as anything, because, like, I wanted more out of it, and we got what we got, which was fine, but it would have been great to have, like, a full-on, like, Western zombie apocalypse instead of, like, oh, yeah, here's a necromancer with, like, 10 dudes and Wyatt Earp.
You have Kemmler on screen, and he didn't do much. It's kind of disappointing, but it's Kemmler. Come on.
Yeah.
Well he would make a good... you could do a lot of things with him, but in the same way they did a Darth Bane trilogy back in the day, which everyone really seems to like, and I think I only ever bothered with the first one, which I enjoyed, but you could do, like, a trilogy with him in all these different time periods, you know, and then do the World War I/World War II finale combo type thing. But you can put him pretty much anywhere because, I mean, we don't really know how long he's been around and kicking exactly. So, and since it goes back at least to the 1800s, you know, who knows? Mm-hmm. So maybe that'll be a spinoff series one day. You know, after he's already come back and fused with a Walker and the BAT, and we've had a final showdown with him of some kind.
Yeah. That's definitely happening.
I mean, I can't unfortunately say it won't. But
are we still talking about Kemmler?
Yeah.
So is he the kaiju, and that just makes more sense to the statue?
Right, like he's gonna come back and fuse with the Cthulhu or something, and
right,
that'll be that.
Because of course,
that's what the author would do.
Sure.
At least according to the minds of some people.
So would he be a half Thulu at that point?
A Chem Thulu?
Yeah, I was going to say that, but it didn't feel right.
All right,
I gave my three to somebody else.
I don't know. I'm just going to... I didn't...
I don't know.
Which threes. So, I don't know. I'm just going to go off of which ones that you had said, because, like, they're all really good ones. The backup is a... It's nice to get into someone else's brain, and it's like, so the other short stories that come to mind, of something like Even Hand... getting into Marcone's brain. Thomas is a great character, and seeing how he was trying to deal with life at that time and his different perspectives and how much he could see out of the people around him and how much the White Court desire was affecting him, and also being hungry all the time. That's the story that we got all the information about the Venators, right? Is when he had to start getting help from Bob, and Bob wouldn't start helping unless he explained what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's also pretty significant.
Where Jim Butcher basically drops a whole parallel 20 book series and a short story. And then it's like, I don't have time to write that. Sorry, guys. But, you know, what a great,
I mean, maybe great, someday, great, but, you know, idea. Good idea, right?
Yeah.
Well, if all you ever want to do is write Dresden File adjacent things, then yeah, the whole history of the Venatori is a great through line.
Not just that, but it's like 20 books worth of gods, you know, to wipe out.
Or devils. 20 books worth of historical figures. You could do a different one each time, stretching back to like God. You could do the same thing with the swords in theory. I mean, you could, and maybe even parallel those.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Knights and Venator is a history of the Dresden Files.
You literally mirror the Dresden Files. And so it's like the knights only show up every 5 books, right? You know, so.
Right. And each time is a different one. Yeah. Because it's a different century.
Yeah. So.
Sure. Why not? And then Goodman Gray will pop up every once in a while. Because again, who knows how old he is. And he's probably been run into people.
Yeah. You got to be careful, though, because then you'll have like Dresden and Thomas and everybody show up and you'll be writing like Dave Filoni. So you got to watch out for that. But
well, I'm not doing any of this, so it's not worried.
I'm just the general you.
I know. So, and in the same way that I've dropped plenty of things that I used to love, I will, if the Dresden Files jumps too many sharks, I will happily drop it too. Well, you know,
not happily.
I will see this through only just because I don't want to disappoint you guys, but.
Thank you.
If it took a real steep dive, I would have trouble.
Thank you for making me realize that someday possibly this might end, you know. So
I mean, we still got like 20 years. We're
gonna have Justin's
kids are gonna start having kids by the time we're done with this.
And we're gonna have them on the podcast as adults by the time Justin's gotten them to read it.
Like Andreas will be stateless and he'll have to, you know, jump around from Wi-Fi point to Wi-Fi point towards the end to try and
Russia's taken over.
No, it won't be Russia. It'll be because, you know, you don't really know what you're talking about.
No, enough. Ah, I see like that. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
If you don't think about it. Also, what were you eating and why didn't you share?
Lasagna.
Yeah,
never mind. I don't trust Nordic lasagna. I'll go around the corner to the Italian place.
Right. I saw noodles. I didn't see lasagna. So yeah, it's like, were you eating lasagna like a spaghetti? But
because I thought it was Chef Boyardee, and I was like, that's a throwback. Right.
Yeah. No, it was. You know, this. I don't know what to say. It was lasagna.
Well, you also
lasagna plates. Uh-huh. With meat sauce and tomato and bechamel and it was just then cheese.
But we know what you count as pizza, so it bears clarification.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of like a fast version. It wasn't like super duper good.
Oh.
No, sorry.
Good to know.
But yeah. Never seen Dresden eat lasagna.
He doesn't really eat anything only other than sandwiches and Burger King.
Yeah,
and they're always
the first mention of Burger King is in Full Moon. I can have you know because
can't actually recall him ever even using ever eating anything that required a knife and fork. Now that you're mentioning it,
because he had a near miss with steak a few times. He's got steak sandwiches, so
right.
I gotta give this to you. I was like, has he never sat down to eat a steak or something? And I was like, shit, no steak sandwiches, but I don't know.
Nope. It's always leftover sandwiches in St. Mary's, Burger King, or Mac steak sandwich.
There's leftover pizza sandwiches. They're not leftover.
Cheerios that he almost poured Coke into.
Right. Okay. So
he did pour Coke. Oh, yeah. Right. No, he didn't pour Coke. He ate them separately drank Coke. Yeah. In a dignified fashion, if I remember the line correctly. Right.
Sorry to interrupt this, but I'm on his website so that I could get a list of the short stories so I could remember all the titles and stuff. I don't know when this got added, but there is now a widget that's when's the next book, and it's a tracker. Okay.
Brandon
Henderson. It sounds like the kind of thing that should have been there for a while.
10% for 12 months, Olympian Affair compiling, so it's at 100%. I'm assuming compiling means with the editor, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Warrior Born is another novella I hadn't heard of.
That's a novella of Cinder Spires.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, that
would be wise.
It's about what's his face?
Yeah, the cat dude.
Aren't they all cat dudes? That narrows it down to nothing.
Benedict. His name's Benedict.
Yeah,
isn't
it? Benedict. I forgot his name. I have to do a reread before that book.
Yeah, and I haven't really thought of it in years because I know how Dresden Files has been, and at least Dresden Files, I was already hooked in. And this one I got hooked in too, but only like a little bit, you know? So, but yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry. Interrupted, but you know, there's a couple of these of his like microfictions I don't remember reading either. So I'm like, I'm going to go reread these, but yeah.
I remember. Yeah,
he's lifted that straight from Sanderson. And I think it's a great thing to have on your website. Good shout.
Right. He probably hopefully gets like 80% less harassed now, but he's just be like, go look at my website.
I was going to say, if you were that kind of fan, you would have been harassing him this whole time because you didn't even know there was a widget.
No, I'm the kind of fan that doesn't harass him.
That's what I'm saying. So for every one of you, there's everyone that's listening to us, like when the next book is coming out.
Right.
Who don't have our stalwart self-control.
Certainly not all the time.
Well, no one's perfect other than...
Now I mean, I've got the source material right here, so I'm just like...
What, yeah, ask about the steak?
Yeah.
You might as well.
Based on the comment of this, that there was a steak when...
Well, no, he didn't eat that kind of steak. I mean, it wasn't that kind of meal. He wasn't with a vampire.
With Kim Delaney, she was treating him to food because he was... To food, yes. She needed answers.
I don't remember what it was.
So, which exact food?
Well, I think it was at Max, so that's why...
It wasn't Max. He's eating a steak. I just read that. He's eating a steak sandwich. Thing or they're eating steak. You know, he's not eating a steak. He's eating steak. I don't think utensils are mentioned, but I would assume.
Well, if it's regular steak, I wouldn't put it past them. But still,
they're eating regular steak. I'm very sure. Like I literally just read, like, listened to them like 3 days ago or something.
There you go. It's like in the second to worst book.
Well, this is what happens when we have awesome fans. They do fact-checking for us.
Mm-hmm. I took the food, steaks, and potatoes and green beans back to the table, sat down.
Oh my God, eat vegetables?
That's silverware food.
Right? Yeah, but green beans, like, it's a staple. Like, Mac is apparently just got, like, Southern barbecue now.
So. Oh, yeah, no, I'm an expert at pushing green beans away from my food. They come with lots of things.
You don't like green beans?
I don't.
What's wrong with green
beans? Yeah, green beans is like, that was my gateway green. And then I eventually realized that broccoli is also awesome. And
broccoli is awesome.
You know, broccoli hasn't gotten awesome. It used to be terrible.
What's the little cabbages? Because that's when you know
cauliflower. I'm around,
man. No, cauliflower is the white
stuff. Brussels sprouts.
Thank you.
So Brussels sprouts and lima beans, you know that I've gone off the deep end because I'll eat them. Now, God, I still hate
peas. You must be 40.
But, you know.
Peas are, they could be interesting sometimes. I don't know. But peas are neutral.
That is the most polite thing I could possibly say about a pea, is it's interesting. I
mean,
it's
like, you know, if you cook anything in enough butter, it tastes good.
In-season peas that are like just like very quickly heated up, like they're delicious. Don't overcook them, then they're shit.
So I'd just like to warn everybody right now who didn't read between the lines that when the director says that she's interested in having you for dinner, ask her how much butter is involved, because like,
check your cholesterol levels before going in.
Right.
Just don't eat anything for 2 days and then you can go to her house. Well, I mean, how much butter goes on Indian food depends on the dish, I guess. And since that's the only thing you're getting if you go to her house.
Well,
when she asks, you know, when she says that she wants tacos. Yeah, when she says she wants to cook for humans, ask her if it's the British four or the American four. So, sorry, that just popped into my head. I had to go with it.
They both use a lot of fat, so.
Oh, man.
I guess it's the difference between butter and lard at that point.
Whether there's a U or not, you know, so the number four or four, you know.
And if there's an E at the end of the word unnecessarily.
Mm. Yeah. You're going to cook the forward humans, so. So anyway, who's next? Because we got to get this back on the track at some point.
Do we?
I don't know. I guess I'll put Even Hand up there as one of my favorites, just because it's an really interesting look into Mark Cohn. And especially looking backwards, it's still very interesting and significant about with Justine and Guard and especially Mark Cohn. And the fortifications. And there was exactly a line. I think I've seen it before, but I double checked this morning. We're talking about he's not a wizard. He's not a supernatural creature. All of those people had been born to what they are. and he says, I made a choice. And that's it.
Oh, nice.
And it's like he had made a choice to be John Marcone the mobster, but he also made a choice that we know already now what he's actually referring to, but was not hinted at in anything. That was a pretty dire fight. Like, he broke his arm. Hendrix got hurt and concussed. It was a terrible result, but no hint whatsoever the fact that he had already taken up a coin.
Right. And I like how the detail that they go into with the pistol and everything, and, you know, like why it's magically, you know, important and everything. And then you see him with like a dozen of them, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't remember that part.
He shoots the Fomorian with a bullet.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
But I thought like they talked about how she had to go get a new bullet. Oh, right. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like a bandolier
of all those old guns.
Right. So, yeah. So I was thinking in the short story, and I was like, oh, I don't know. But yeah, you're right.
Yep. Yeah. It's really good because of Marcone, and it's really good because it actually ties into the canon, you know, so. Yeah. Those are all great things. It just doesn't make my top three.
I don't know which ones I would name top three, because I think there's more than I would be wanting to spend the time of actually choosing. I just
randomly go at pick which ones. Three.
Yeah,
because that's the tone you want. Because that's what you wanted to set this tone as, and that's what I did. So there you go. Do it.
No, you said pick it that three. Way. I never made it.
I make the rules. Remember.
Put him in his place.
Yeah, you're giving him power right now.
She already did. She's not going to name three.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did I do that?
For my own podcast with Mike Jack and Hookers.
That'd be fun. Right. Let's do another one.
I need permission, but other than that, like,
I don't have the budget for either of those things.
I don't anticipate a no, but, you know.
I don't live in a socialized country like some people.
Yeah, God forbid to live here. Shush, that's terrible.
So supply us with the blackjack and hookers, then.
Yeah. This is your federal allotted prostitute, so.
You don't get to pick her age or her condition.
Right. I was like, just think this through, guys. Yeah. It's not going to be what you think. It's going to be like, we should go to a nudist beach, huh? No.
You play blackjack with old Soviet like ration packets. Right.
Another short story I went to because it had just a call out that I really liked, but it was Jury Duty. There's a line in it that is a reference to another one of my favorite series. And so of course I wanted to look at that. He says, to steal from Bruce, no matter how turbocharged the wizard, someone with brains, guts, and a 45 can seriously cramp his style. Just direct line from Bruce of, no matter how subtle the wizard, a knife between his shoulder blades will seriously cramp his style. It's also a pretty good short story. Is the legal things that's going on. But what's more interesting is that both Even Hand and Jury Duty are about basically turf war between Lara and Marcone. Because with Justine, she stole stuff from the Fomor. She ran to Marcone for protection, drawing him into an affair of the Accords. He had to pay Wehrguild of $250,000 and shit like that. But it was an imposition.
Now there are ulterior motives behind that, most likely.
Yeah. And with Jury Duty, it was a Malvora that had been killed, and they were trying to set up a guy as a patsy take the fall, or he did kill the guy or something, but they were maneuvering to make it happen, and Marcone maneuvered to put Harry on the jury that would sniff it out, using him as a cat's paw, but using him against Lara. And so the competition inside Chicago is spilling into different places, and it's an interesting buildup if you track them between the short stories.
Laura also took notes and then took that personally. So she married him to make sure that that never happens again. Like, I'll do something you're not willing to do, Marcone. Like,
you cannot be compelled to testify against your spouse.
Right. Jeez.
Okay, that's a good point. Like, I don't know. Legal stories are fun. Let's do more of those. The law was great.
Right. Oh, man. The wife has been watching Queen Charlotte, so there's been a lot of like royal drama episodes and discussion in the house and whatever. So it's a Netflix thing about, it's a Bridgerton like offshoot, like it's a like a prequel kind of or whatever. So I'm just thinking like all the nonsensical drama from that show as a stand in for like Harry and Lara's relationship, you know, where it's like, you know, you can do whatever you want because you're married to me and you have the authority, but I don't want to see your face. Get out of here. Go live in the other mansion, you know? So, but that's, you know, like the first episode, second episode, I think, but yeah.
Okay. Someone say something.
Yeah. I'm going to jump
on. I'm not a big fan of the Goodman Gray short story.
Okay.
I think we've done that before.
Yeah. This is our favorite short stories. We don't need to fill the air with all our least favorite ones.
You said say something, so I said something.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I'm kind of a basic bitch as far as the stories that I like, you know, because it's like, I like Backup, I like Day Off, and I like The Warrior. And because we already talked about it, it's kind of convenient. There's some really strong honorable mentions that we haven't really talked about. Like, I like, what was the one? Cold Case.
Yeah.
I was confusing it. I was conflating it with Day One, which is like, eh, you know, but Cold Case is really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the Bigfoot stories, you know, like I think his kid and the girl are kind of goofy, but I like seeing River Shoulders. And like, I read those after he was kind of like introduced into the main canon where it's like, oh, by the way, I've worked with this guy before. And I'm like, where the hell is that? So I had to go read those stories. You know, I was kind of behind on that a little bit. So it was a nice way to get around it. Anything from Mouse's perspective, of course, is really highly rated, but it's just like Day Off is eminently quotable and funny and short, and there's not a lot of like emotion like that you need to buy into. If I recall right, he's with Lucio, which, you know, was literally date.
Which is why it's Andrea's yeah. favorite.
Right. It's literally manufactured to be good. So it's like in hindsight, yeah, it sucks, but in the moment they were happy and it's cute and it worked. You know, The Warrior we talked about, it's just a good, clean story all the way through, period. You know, it's a nice slice of Dresden and whatnot. And then Backup is, it's great to see an opposite view from Dresden. Like, I would love to have a Marcone
short story. It's a woman that's crying and something about a child in danger. He's totally going to fall for this trap.
Yeah, he's got no chance. Yeah. But like, similarly, I think I would love to have, you know, like a Marcone based short story where he's working against Dresden directly so that you can see what that looks like, where, like, you know, Marcone doesn't necessarily have the cool exterior. Well, he might now because now we know about, you know, the coin and everything, but it'd be like, it would be great to see him just be like sweating it out while he's got a poker face with Dresden or something like that, where he's like, man, if he throws fire right now, I'm not ready for this. It's gonna burn the whole fucking place down.
Or even if he comes out on top this time, because Harry's been getting the better of him for a while now,
right?
So now, if there was some matter where they're not slugging it out, but like Marcone outmaneuvers him in such a way where it mostly just hurts Harry's pride, or even if it makes a threat, but whatever right. it is.
Sure.
I mean, you almost got that with Turncoat, or no, White Knight, because Marcone came out on top of, he became Baron after that, and Harry had to say pretty mm-hmm. please for his help in the deeps.
Right. Well, I'm saying since then he's kind of,
yeah,
I mean, he got the knight. Yeah. He got the eye, the castle, the
yeah.
tie, you know, Marcone didn't want the case eye, with what's his face.
Yeah. Right. With, the law.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking mm-hmm. about? Yeah. Yeah, so
there's some small lines about an even hand of like, all of these preparations were obviously not meant for the Fomor that was attacking. These were meant for Harry Dresden, and everyone can right. see that. Justine knows it. She's going to tell it. But there's also when the Fomor busts in and had broken the door, there's just a small offside comment that Marcone had invested in very cheap, flimsy doors at dramatic rather than tactical points.
Right. And it's such a great line too. Yeah. Because it's like Marcone is smart and he's thinking about Dresden, you know? And yeah, it's, I love when you almost, where it's like a quasi fourth wall break, like, because one of the other lines along those along those lines that comes to mind is where, you know, Dresden will occasionally say like, then I did some magic, but nothing flashy that would require a special effects budget, you know, or whatever. And it's just Jim Butcher being like, I know, you know, so it's, yeah, it's just fun. But
yeah. Andreas, you have to share something.
Yeah. I feel like being a contrarian and only picking one. But
if you can,
oh, you got us there. Yeah.
Just because EG said
we have. You to can pick one if it's one none of us have mentioned yet. Like even in passing. Which leaves you with essentially the first two short stories, I think.
Yeah, it's not one of them. I think it's either The Warrior. So I'm just gonna do three because you made that requirement. The Warrior, the newest one that I cannot remember the title on Fugitive. Right now. Yeah. Not The Fugitive. Yes. The Law. The Law is really good.
The other newest one.
Yeah. It only falls a little flat because of what book it follows, I feel like, but it's actually very good short story. The Warrior, The Law, The Vampire in the shopping mall.
It's my birthday too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gross. Okay.
Oh god. I think The Law is just like really good. I really liked the lawyer being introduced in this one. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of him. Mm-hmm. Found him delightful.
Yeah,
I found his dog delightful, and I found I hope him and Mouse becomes best friends.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a Suday is another really good short story too.
It really is. Suday's, yeah, really like good. That's why like Zuday and Fugitive would be up there, you know, for me and whatnot. But yeah, I think
actually Zuday, Warrior, and Law. I'm removing is my birthday too.
Okay. It's tough, right? You know, like, you know, if you expanded it out to five, it'd be a bit easier, but you know, it gets bigger.
No one's holding you to three.
It's us. It's three is a magical number. You've got
so is five.
Your three favorite.
No, five's a lazy number. Name your top five. It's like, all right.
You can.
It really only works 20. With sports because you can easily leave someone out at six.
What's your top five favorite baseball moments of all time?
I can give you those.
Anyway. Yeah. So the law is fine. You know, it's just to me, it wasn't like. It's not as fun as some of the other stories, and you know, like it's tight, but it's like you already kind of knew where it was going to culminate. I feel like, you know, in a lot of ways. So, what I don't want, even though it's like you kind of can't get away from it because of what the Dresden Files is, but it's like I don't need like an Angel style series where like every demon and vampire has a real job and they're all lawyers or doctors or judges or, you know, whatever, where it's like Dresden has to confront them in an office building somewhere every time. And it's just like,
not every time, you know, it should like, be for special occasions. I do like
sure, that thing, but it's like, you know, because of course vampires can live for hundreds of years, if not, you know, forever. I just say hundreds of years because until Dresden meets them, it's usually a lot less, but yeah, they're always like rich in some job that is rich, or they're like, you know, aristocratic kind of or something.
Yeah, where are your like, you know, ghoul fast food workers who just like eat the junkie that passes out behind the McDonald's at 2 a.m. because they shot up?
You know, there's a Buffy episode.
Okay,
for that.
So I'm definitely not staying past closing at a Waffle House now. Thank you for that. So
well, if you, first of all, if you ever found yourself in a Waffle House, period, you've made a wrong turn.
Not necessarily.
Necessarily.
Surely.
And the less light that's out, increases that exponentially.
What if it's like hard rain outside and everything is flooding,
it's
and it's
hurricane because you're back
and in need, yeah, and I need some place to eat.
Drown.
You know only Waffle House is open, man.
Drown. So, just or go hungry that day.
I'm
either drown or go hungry.
Don't tell me, Justin, don't tell me you don't got a little prepper basement with some food stuffs in it. Like, no way you don't have
dude from Tremors. Office,
but yeah. So also
you got beans and cans, I'm sure.
Yeah, three stories in a hill. The main thing I got to worry about here is if, you know, the ground gives out and we slide all the way into the valley.
Well, that's just more room for your beans.
Yeah. Liquefaction is going to be really fun here, but yeah, so.
Actually, after the there's a Buffy episode, I thought that would have been enough for you, Justin.
What?
Once you with the whole like ghoul thing, it's basically the same thing. It's a demon that has like a she's an old lady. She eats people, and they taste good at the fast food place Buffy works at. That's why she eats them, because they eat all that burger food. Long
time, but yeah, I might recognize it if I saw it. But you know, it's been like 20-ish years almost since I've watched too many. So like the wife keeps trying to do like a rewatch, and then we'll realize that it's just slightly too intense for the kids still, even though it's like this is about as softball horror as you're gonna get. You know,
if you watch the remaster, prepare to be disappointed.
Okay.
They like did a remaster, but did not do a very good job. Like, yeah, we make it for ultra wide, like for wide screens instead of the old TV format.
They never do that right. It's like not like, a single time has that ever turned out well for the old. Like,
yeah, there's a sound guy standing right here with his boom mic. You can just see him standing, something like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, Buffy was classic for some of that stuff. Like, and there, anyway, there's some other ones where it's like, did you see the Gene guy? Because he was either in some episode or some movie where it's just, you know, it's like a period piece, but there's a dude with blue jeans in the background. But anyway, yeah, if you didn't hear the Star Trek remasters, those are worth it. Because if you're gonna watch the original series, you should at least watch it with special effects. So,
not an issue. It's not going.
I think, is it today Black Mirror's out, though? Because like, I'm going to watch the shit out of that, that's for sure. Or did do nobody else watch Black Mirror?
Yeah, a single one. I didn't.
I never watched the other one that I always confuse that show with, but I know it's not that show.
Except not
I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Yeah. I think it's another... Black Mirror is a British show, right?
Yeah, well, it was. And then it wasn't.
I think it's another British show, if that helps.
There's a really funny video I gotta link you, Justin, that I think you would find hilarious about working at Netflix and why Black Mirror cost a lot of trouble.
Black Mirror is the anthology show, right? Where they're all just like different things.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Technical, so technology dystopia. Episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just, it's like The Outer Limits, but like more modern, you know? Or Twilight Zone was more, yeah, more well known, I guess. But I watched The Outer Limits more, so that would be a fun thing to watch with the kids.
I watched neither. I think I've watched some Twilight Zone because every once in a while my dad used to have it on. But the most obvious ones, like, you know, the last man in the world with his glasses type, right. Like the ones everyone's seen.
William Shatner with the gremlin.
Oh, the Mully one's really good too. I was just thinking about choice.
Cold Case, we mentioned it.
Yeah, Cold Case.
I mean, or you mean Bombshells.
With some of the short stories, cold. When it gives you significant information, it colors the whole short story as being more liked.
The law's kind of colored for the situation around also our, like, the podcast. Like, it was a big,
yeah,
it was a big moment. So
huge. That was our peak. We ain't getting better than that.
You say that now. Say that now.
We can try, but
one of us will have a controversy and get us canceled, and it'll probably be Andreas, statistically speaking.
Setch?
How's that? Like, what? Coming from
I would think EG, but
No, I'm too obvious a choice. The director doesn't go anywhere. You have kids you're trying to set a good example for, so that leaves Andreas.
But I don't go anywhere either.
Doesn't matter.
And I'm not American. Not like, we don't have...
That's,
we don't
that's
have,
what makes you the Dark Horse candidate.
But we don't have cancel culture yet. Not yet.
I mean, your governments do it for you, so...
So, yeah. What are we going to do for the next 20 minutes?
Wait.
Well, we could talk more about food or any of the shows we just talked about, or
but that's for the other part.
We could talk about we could project outward and talk about short stories we want, like we were earlier.
I mean, a more mouse perspective, as
he's. I don't want that to get stale. Let that go for a little while.
That's very true. I just.
There's only so many times I can hear, and I was a good dog before even I'm like, I get it.
You know,
stop.
Yeah. I do have some Dresden talking points from my re-listen I am doing right now. Some interesting things I noted. I don't know if we've talked about before. Okay. If you want. So I'm listening to Grave Peril, and I noticed that, you know, also Jim actually reads an introduction to that one, that this is where the Dresden Files really kicks into gear. And there's a lot of world building. There's a lot of world building stuff in the Dresden Files, in the Grave Peril, that's comes in that book. Like, not just like, you know, the big plot lines being set up that we've talked about before, but little things like, and things he's not actually quite, I would say, done with, that he changes still. Like the curses, Harry's starting to use the curses, but they're not Stars and Stones, Empty Night yet. It was like Stars and Suns or something, and it'll something else that I noted was like, it was slightly different.
You sure that wasn't like a misread?
That's, I think, I'm sure it's the audiobook, so I can't be sure, but I'm pretty sure that it's text true, I would guess, but I don't know. Another interesting thing that's just vaguely mentioned, that I guess Jim kind of changed his mind around how he wanted to do it and introduce it and present it, but had planned back then, apparently, is the Outsiders and the Old Ones, the whole Cthulhu kind of mythos thing that he's doing. He had planned in book three for sure that the Gatekeeper is the Gatekeeper because he's watching the outer gates, protecting reality. Because Dresden throws an offhand mention of like, not the old, something about Old Ones. What?
Yeah, that alarm wards would be going off all over the world, alerting the Gatekeeper if an Old One had come back.
Yeah, something about, yeah, Old Ones are going to come back, and the Council and the Gatekeeper would be all over that.
Yes, because he was talking, because they were talking about, I think it was Tiamat, because that's like the only mention she has in the book. It was that conversation with Bob.
Yeah, because of the ghost's power level being able to enter thresholds and stuff. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to check in with the receipt. So they say Stars in Sky and Stars in Skies, and then there are four references to Stars and Stones in the exact same book. So they do both. But, yeah.
But there was some curses that were different and not something he uses after this book, I think. Yeah, so that might be the Stars and Skies. I thought it was Suns for some reason, but
Well, there's a couple, like Morgan uses one, right? I think it's someone's blood, or is it someone's beard that he uses in
Merlin's beard.
Like, yeah, I remember that really suddenly.
Was it Merlin's beard? Because I remember that always being a Harry Potter thing.
I thought he used a Merlin something. What else would he, like, Merlin's prehensile penis, Harry?
Well, that's why I don't remember that it was Merlin. It could be.
Did you see that elephant gift, too?
Yeah. Merlin's...
Because I thought he did a curse when he found out Harry had gotten Intellectus. I distinctly remember him cursing something, but I don't remember what it was exactly.
Do I have Turncoat handy? Probably not.
I do wonder when, I don't remember when it is, but at least in book one and two, James has not got the note about Marconi's name yet.
No, in book one, he's Marconi.
Oh, book two, he's also Marconi.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah. When you go back and reread them, it's like, I'm 17 books deep. It's like, what the hell is this shit? And then you get to Summer Night with everybody else's other favorite moment. But, you know, like...
Michael is actually, I feel like...
He's a different character.
He's a different character than he is in book five and forward.
A little bit, yeah. He's very... He's a lot more rigid.
Yeah, he... he becomes more the Michael we know from book five. I think that's like it's pretty consistent from there. But yeah, I definitely feel like he's like different in book three. Mm-hmm. Also, Jim hadn't quite decided, or it's kind of explained away in Harry's beliefs, Tristan's beliefs of is there a god, is there another god, right? He's not sure about the swords or the power that of which they provide and wield. Like he's like it's just Michael believes it, and that is power enough.
Yeah, he knows enough to know faith is power, but yeah, whether or not it's true.
Yeah, and he had a conversation or three with an archangel.
Yeah, and book five, it's more it all gets more cemented there, right? All that plot line, that those threads wasn't quite sure in book three, I think.
Well, even in book five, it's the fake shroud has it because it has power, but it's obviously fake. So they're still threading that needle.
Yeah, it's fun. It is funny how he can, since he's actually interacted with both the real shroud and the fake shroud. Because the fake shroud is still quite powerful, right? Like Nicodemus is after it for a reason. It's funny how there are different sources of power in the Dresdenverse, right? Like there's the whole faith and humans' belief can empower something to a pretty absurd degree, but there are real shroud. What is that exactly powered of? Is that just Jesus's blood? Is that God himself somehow have bestowed power upon these items? What are they empowered by? Because the faith is being, like, the faith magic power is being absorbed by the fake shroud. That's where that power is going, right? And I'm presuming not going in both places.
I guess it depends. Like, so if you believe in the shroud as an idea, I guess maybe the real one gets the majority of that juice. But if you're actually, like, thinking actively about the one that's supposedly wherever it was at the time, or you go there to pray to it, as people go to icons and stuff, that's when that one gets the big bump. But even then, it's still the idea of the shroud, so maybe the other one's getting a kickback this whole time.
I was gonna say, like, to me it's like a reflection, like the sun and the moon, right? Like, the moon is illuminated. It's just not the primary source, but it still gets some of the light. So everybody thinks that the Shroud of Turin is magical. Therefore, it's magical. Everybody thinks this is the Shroud of Turin, makes this specific thing magical. But when the real Shroud of Turin gets found or comes out or whatever, it's not going to not have that same power because it was the true source of that faith in the first place would be that's my take, So you don't have to worry about like the real shroud losing its power, not to mention the fact that it shrouded a deity anyway. So it might not need to be powered by faith per se. Maybe it's got kickbacks from that, but
Yeah. I mean, my thought would just be that, in the Dresdenverse, Jesus was some sort of powerful being, potentially son of the Lord Mighty himself, and then by being in proximity of him, these artifacts were made.
Well, it's almost certain.
Or maybe it's in the sacrifice that Jesus chose to make, and these artifacts are connected in that way.
Sure. Him. I mean, it's got to be something because even Mab refers to him as the White Christ, so he is something more than just historical figure. But it's like even the swords used to be a lot more cut and dry because it was, they've each got a nail from the crucifixion. That's what's giving them power. Oh, but wait, there's angels living in them? ? And is it they're what's empowering the nails, or the nails are just kind of like a misdirect, or is it a fusion thing?
Is there an angel in each of the other artifacts? Presumably, the nails would be on a level of these other, like of the Grail and the shroud and the plaque and such.
Well, you would think like so. At a minimum, the knife, because of what it just did, right?
Which makes me think: do those artifacts also have an angel that is basically?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
It's a little bit more traditional mythology at that point, right? Because like genius loci and whatever, right? Like the hill has a spirit. This grass has a spirit. These bugs have a spirit, whatever. So, you know, he's just kind of lumping Christianity in with that, where it's like, you know, the nail has a spirit, AKA an angel, you know, so. But.
Good Catholic okay. one, Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have awesome fans. Thank you, Jonathan.
Right. So
yeah, I like the idea better of like each of the artifacts having sort of a guardian angel supervisor rather than actually living in the item itself.
I hope someone's finger bone becomes a powerful artifact we have to deal with. That'd be funny.
What? So Harry can make a joke about an enemy getting fingered?
Sure.
Like it's a very Catholic thing to do. So it just depends on if Harry would need it or whatever. Like, so, well, both literally and, you know, I was just thinking with canon, you know, with them getting canonized, it's like you dice up your saints and send them to a
well there was a sword, it might have even been Durandal, which is one of them, that had like saints blood in it or something in the hilt, so I guess, you know, maybe that was, but they do things like that. There's always some saint's bones or hair or whatever.
Esperachius with Durandal, it looks like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think another slightly different thing could be explained away that he does. I don't think he's in that much, but Fort Hill also seems like a slightly different person than who he is from Book 5 and onwards. Mm-hmm. And I completely forgot about who is it? What's his name? The nightmare attacks him. It's the one of Murphy's colleagues.
Oh,
right. I don't remember his name. That he like at least it's implied that he recovers, and I actually like I could have sworn that like. He's mauled beyond recognition and like permanently insane, but the scene ends in when he helps that he will recover, and he also talks to his wife and stuff.
Recognized his wife. The binding was broken on it.
It was a spiritual attack, and like a lot of there's a lot of other implications and stuff that like spiritual damage heals over time. You know, depending.
Sure, on sure. I just had this like memory that he was permanently made insane by this, but
gotcha.
Clearly he wasn't when I was rereading it.
There was that guy's he gets mentioned by adjacency, I guess, that later in Blood Rites, there was someone who was his nephew that would have been happy to be like a thug to join up with Dresden for something else. But Dresden said no newbies. That's why it was Murphy. So there's some slight callback with it.
Yeah, there was, I mean, like when the proven guilty was a lot of the psychic damage that he saw that no one would ever recover from, like that one girl who like was savagely torn, but then he looked at her and just like, no, she's gone. They're not going to be able to do anything, versus the old man who had gotten out a little better because it had mostly been hammer hands pounding on him.
Yeah,
right. I mean, different things too. Like the fetches are spiritual creatures trying to inflict that kind of horror and damage, whereas like Kravos was a second-rate fire caller, so, you know, he just... Come on, that's, like, one of the best lines in the series, guys. Like, so he might not have had the horsepower to make it work, but...
Yeah, well, Kravos was already dead. It's kind of hard to work with when you're a ghost, but...
But it was a nightmare.
Whatever, like... It just feels like an unresolved question of Harry made a ghost in grave peril.
And yeah, then he ate the ghost, so it's fine.
And it's just so weird.
Yeah,
and then he becomes a ghost story. Yeah. How many ghosts can you have? It's like,
yeah, it's
you like can have as many as you die in the lore, but to be fair, the ghost story ghost, he is not a ghost. He is just running around in his soul. Right. That is different.
That's fair.
I mean, it is a technicality because, that I'll stand by and understand. It's just how many ghosts can he have? He has at least one more death coming to him. Is he going to leave another ghost?
Very possibly.
Well, he said something about Baggy, that he ensuring that he was going to be a ghost to be able to hang around her.
Right. Well, yeah, because ghosts kind of turn into a couple of things. Like, you know, first of all, ghosts are largely like psychic residue, right? That's not necessarily the soul or the full creature, though ghost story kind of blurs the lines a little bit. But ghosts can also be created, apparently. So, you know, with the right kind of power and preparation. So, you know, there's differences there. And then, you know, like Andreas said, you know, he's not a ghost per se in Ghost Story. He's just, you know, he's got to follow all the same rules as them, but, you know, he's a different kind of incorporeal entity. Like, maybe it's a difference. Like, this is one of those things where ghost is the umbrella term, because it's like, is a poltergeist a ghost? You know, is a shade a ghost? Is a wraith a ghost? Kind of, but not really, right? They're all more specific kinds of creatures. So Harry was a ghost, but that's just an umbrella term. It wasn't, you know, due to creation and function and all of those things, it was different. So, but he had to follow mostly the same rules. So, yeah, I like Steve's answer too. So a ghost is a soul fragment, like a Horcrux. So
it's kind of unresolved in a way, right? Exactly what constitutes, like, what ghosts are.
They're very it depends on who you ask, because Sir Stewart is like, you know, I am not the real Sir Stewart. I'm just an echo of
exactly
whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that explanation, the main thing that we don't have an answer for is, like, when Harry was running around in Chicago in between, could he have run into Sir Stewart? And or is Sir Stewart really in some final destination, you know, heaven, hell, purgatory, wherever, you know? So whereas, like, the one that was left behind really is just an echo, you know?
Are the Chicago in between, are they souls or are they ghosts?
Right. In their
we case, don't know.
Probably more souls because of how Uriel interacts with them. So at least,
well, even at the end, Uriel interacts with Sir Stewart and says there's enough there to rebuild something that he can make use of. And, you know, they talk about how, like, if Dresden decided to stay what he was, he would potentially, like, he could stick around and watch over them, but he would potentially start turning into, like, a Lecter Specter type as time went on. And, you know, Bob talks about how he's always heard that you kind of need your soul and your spirit to morph into this thing to move on. So there's lots of squishy variables.
Right.
I think he says it's like your spirit is the seed that goes into the soul. It is your soil, or vice versa, whatever it is. So, I mean, like, if Harry had not absorbed his ghost at the end there, I think that ghost probably could have gone on acting independently and just would have been whatever Harry was up until that point and remained that way until it started losing its way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially the Grave Peril thing, like, the Grave Peril is a cheat. So it's like, you're like, it's fun to think about, but also don't get too much into it, because it's like, it's a Star Trek level, like, quantum shenanigans, where it's like, we split the ship into two timelines so we can fight alongside ourselves. Like, it's literally like, sorry, Star Trek nerd, but he is absolutely cheating. But he at least closes that loop by eating his power back. But
right, if this, you know, it's a cheat, it exists, it's an exploit, and other people are going to do it. And is that what Jack Murphy had to do? Like,
no.
I mean, it's interesting that we see him and he has a ghost, but he also committed suicide.
Yeah. Because you don't think he had a strong attachment to his daughter, and despite being, you know, crazy, depressed, and a bunch of other things, he still wanted to take care of her, aka leaving behind a ghost, you know?
Yeah, but he wasn't hanging around because he was in Chicago between.
Well, he got scooped up. He's not Sir Stewart. He's,
with the types of things that he had to fight, it makes me wonder if it was something like the movie Fallen, that was the only way out.
Maybe.
And he's Catholic. Yeah. That's like, I mean, yeah. However much he takes that seriously, but
well, so is Murphy, and she's in Valhalla now, so yeah, it's different,
right?
Suicide, yeah. Though.
Yeah, it's
can you not go to Valhalla if you suicide? It's just you have to die with your sword. I think that's in the field of battle.
It's literally, yeah. I was like, I think that's literally one of the things. Like, there just might be a ritualistic. There might be a ritualistic suicide to get around it, or something like that. Like, well, you know, some cultures,
you're battling your demons and you lost. That's still a battle. So,
like, you know, for example, if you commit seppuku, do you go to
the those guys? Place? Those guys probably would go to Valhalla if they weren't already going to whatever the Japanese afterlife is.
You know, the Norse are like, dude, like, didn't die in battle per se, but that's fucking badass. He gets a pass, man. Like, you know, so.
Or no, it's just, I can see it both ways. Even more of a statement of like, I am foregoing Valhalla to make this point.
Yeesh. Yeah, I don't know. That's a hell of a gamble. I am a stubborn fucking asshole, but I'm not sure I would forsake the afterlife just to make a point. I'm not sure I'm that stubborn. Like,
yeah, especially if I actually knew it was there. Like, right. If I had met a provable Valkyrie and knew that, like, dying in battle would get, I might actually sign up for something.
Sure. Yeah.
If you could assure that the Valkyrie is around you.
Well, obviously I would, because if I met this Valkyrie, I would not let them out of my sight again.
That might be expensive.
No. I'll just entertain the Valkyrie and make her want to keep me around. And we'll go to exotic places like Norway to visit Sven over there.
I always like the fjords personally, so, you know.
All right, we did it. We made it.
Barely.
Content. Aren't you all happy?
Yeah.
They stuck with us.
So are we doing, we're doing Lord of the Rings next week?
No, you
guys are.
Okay. No. Yeah.
Master Commander.
Well, that's why I was trying to clarify, like, if we needed another cycle, or if we were, because like I should be done with the first book by then, you know. With,
yeah, I saw that list of upcoming events, and I'm like, wait, so we're watching Master and Commander for an episode coming up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm not opposed to. I really like that movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
But are we doing the book thing where we read that and then compare it to the movie?
In hindsight, in hindsight, after watching it, when I was reflecting today, I was like, it was pretty good. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not like, man, I can't wait to watch this again. You know, so.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. Like, I've got a list of movies where it's like, I watch them and it's like, man, I'd really like to watch this movie again. But I just watched this movie.
Master and Commander is actually one of those movies that I like, if I find it on, I just kind of watch it. I don't know why.
Sure.
But I do enjoy it.
It's a great movie.
That's part of why we're talking about it, because the director, you know, she said it was her comfort movie and
one of latched onto that.
You are a weird person. And I'm saying this as somebody who will actively just watch it if I find it on TV. But like, considering the things you don't watch.
If you come across the movie on TV and you just sit down to watch it, I think it counts as a comfort movie, my dude. So you can say whatever you want. Like,
no, it does. But I'm saying, but to make it my, like, it is not my primary comfort.
Yeah, I mean, no.
You like, just made it sound like that's like the movie she just puts on and she wants to feel comfort. Like,
The Mummy or Knight's Tale or Constantine. Right. We've already talked about those. And Master Commander was next.
Yeah. I've never seen Master and Commander.
Well, you need to watch it.
I hadn't either. But yeah, go watch it.
It's a great movie.
Be prepared for lots of nautical terms.
Yes.
Oh yeah, like
the upper southward, going upwards.
Yeah, there's a little bit of port and starboard, but it's more like they mentioned the wind gauge like 8 times in the first like 30 minutes of the movie or whatever, and you're like, cool, dude. Like, I'm pretty sure you could have, you know, changed that up just a little bit, but
nope, they're going to be technical. Yeah. They stuck to the technical.
Yeah,
that was.
And what's funny about that is, like, I was reading the trivia that it's like that guy pulled one over on most everybody most of his career, and then they actually got him on a ship, and turns out he can't fucking sail to save anyone's life. Like, you know, so they were like, oh, you just did a lot of research. You cited all your sailing experience, but you just did research. You'd like you sailed one time as a boy, and you were like, yes, I'm a sailor, and wrote a bunch of books about sailing. And almost got somebody killed, like, you know, like that kind of bad. Yeah. So it's just kind of
like Catch Me If You Can, you know, Frank Abagnale, who never was actually as good a con man as he said he was. And that turns into making him an actually great con man.
His best con is conning everybody to make everybody think that he was
a great con man.
Whatever. Yeah.
So, that I have to respect. That's like, I don't even see at that point, you're conceptioning people. So bravo to you.
Yeah. It's hilarious. I was like, no, really, that kind of tracks. And, you know, we should have dug into that a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, oh, yes, the con man said he's conned a lot of people. We'll just take that at face value.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, you're like, why is he going to lie?
To make more money.
Who knows?
Right. Yeah.
Listen, I'm not a studio executive. I didn't green light it. And I'm pretty sure that movie did pretty well, so they made a good return on investment. That's fine. That's another movie I really don't like Tom Hanks' character in, now that I'm thinking about it. Because this came up during Elvis, where it's like, that's one of the few movies where you just like actively don't like his character. And oh, to me, huh?
You can't say about America's Dad. Come on now.
Catch Me If You Can. Tom Hanks was in that?
Yes. He is the main FBI agent. I don't like him in that movie at all.
Yes.
I've only seen like...
I actively want him to fail every time I see him open his mouth.
Well, yeah, I mean, movie. If he's the government, that's just obligatory. So
no, there's plenty of government movies where I can be like, yeah, you know, you're good. Like when they shoot JFK, for example, I'm rooting for the government the whole time.
Yeah, but which side of the government? Like the government,
whichever one gets him shot, killed.
Or the government side that's doing the shooting?
Don't care.
What do you hate JFK for?
I hate the cult around him of just the whole conspiracy nonsense and the love of him. And it's like, he really wasn't that great a president. And he wasn't actually part of a conspiracy killing. Like, he just got shot. Dude, let's chill out a little bit.
I mean, the fact that they shot a U.S. president with, you know, high-powered rifles.
A greater conspiracy constructed by the CIA to kill him.
I think I should end this recording now.
You probably should, because it's just going
to be 3 minutes ago. So, all right. Master and Commander next week. We'll figure out Dresden the week after. Stay tuned.